Hello and welcome to another edition of the Sporting Kansas City Show right here on your home for SKC Soccer Sports Radio 810 WHB. Nate Bucati, as always, joined by the one and only El Jefe, Carter Augustine, as we got a big show for you today, and we have a lot to get to Sporting Kansas City related, but we're going to change things up a little bit to start the show today because there's another big game tonight, and it starts, I'm going to go ahead and give full disclosure to our listeners. We're taping this segment a little bit early today because coming up in a half an hour from now, as you're hearing my voice at 7 o'clock, the United States men's national team is going to be taking on Mexico in Nashville, Tennessee. And so we want to talk about it, get a little preview for it. We're fired up for the game, and we got a good friend who is on the scene for the game tonight. Ivis Kolarcep, kind enough to give us some of his time. So we're going to come right out of the gate with some USA soccer, and we'll get into the Sporting Kansas City stuff here in a little bit. Ivis, how you doing, man? Thanks a lot for the time.
Thanks for having me on.
Well, tell me about maybe what to see. If you can just maybe set the scene for us a little bit in Nashville. This is the second of two big friendlies for this young, new-look United States men's national team. Maybe what do you see as the stakes, and what are some of the things that are the most interesting for us to keep an eye on here tonight?
Well, I think what's interesting about this particular game is that it's definitely different from past U.S.-Mexico games in that there's really nothing on the line as far as World Cup qualifying or Gold Cup or any of that. But there's still, you know, it's the rivalry, so the games are always going to be intense. They're always going to have extra meaning to them. And this one's unique because you have two teams that are both in kind of states of transition. Both teams are being led out by an interim coach. They're both looking for their full head coach for the next cycle. And both teams are featuring a lot of the top young prospects who are going to be key to the next cycle. So it's kind of two teams in the same boat. So it's going to be an interesting one because you have a lot of players who've never been through this rivalry, who've never had to, at least on a senior level. And it's going to be interesting to see how they react, how they respond, and how some of these matchups are. So matchups that we're going to see for probably, if we're lucky, we're going to see them for a few years. And this is going to be the first taste of some of those matchups.
Yeah, obviously you talked about the two interim coaches. I was wondering, do you have any ideas on either of these federations, either of these countries, where they're going to go in the future, and how do these interim coaches go about the game tonight?
Well, as far as Mexico goes, I think if it were up to Mexico, I'm sure they'd be happy to have Tuca Ferretti be their coach. But he's turned it down before, and he's kind of danced around it even more recently. Although he did admit yesterday that there is some clause in his contract and that if Tigres allowed it, he would leave. But beyond that, you got me on who else they might be seriously considering. As far as the U.S. goes, Dave Sarakin's the interim. He's not in the running for the job. He's not, I mean, as much as, you know, people keep asking him, and I almost feel bad for him because, you know, I've heard him be asked a few times now about you know, his thoughts about his chances. And, he tries to be like PC about it, but I think he knows. He's got no shot. As far as who does have a shot, having been at a roundtable with Ernie Stewart last Thursday, I can tell you it's a safe bet it's going to be an American. I know there's rumors about, you know, it could be a Dutch coach, that there are foreign options, but I just my feeling is that it's going to be an American. Greg Berhalter has a very good chance to be that guy. If not him, I mean, I know there's been talk about, you know, your guy, Peter Vermees, even though he's you know, kind of let it be known he has no plans to leave Sporting Kansas City, but I do think it's going to be an American at the end of the day.
You know, and I'm not usually one, Ivis, to put too much stock in a guy has to be from a certain country, but I kind of feel like after what we've been through in the United States through the Jurgen Klinsmann experiment and all of that, I feel like Berhalter and Peter Vermees would be at the top of my list because I do think that there are unique challenges to coaching the United States men's national team, maybe compared to any other country in the world. And I feel like those two guys have a sense of it. They understand it. And I think that the next guy for the U.S. has to be a guy with a clear system and a clear ability to set an identity for the team, because I just don't feel like the United States has had that, what, since Bob Bradley, if at all. I'm just giving you my two cents, and I guess I'm asking you to tell me if you think I'm full of it or what your thoughts are on those things.
No, I agree with you. I think you do want someone who has a good understanding of the landscape in the U.S. And someone, you know, who has that kind of connection or knows the player pool. And, you know, is it necessarily going to be an American? I mean, there aren't many qualified non-Americans who fit that description. I mean, the guy for me who I thought would have been a good fit, even though some people disagree, is Juan Carlos Osorio. And obviously he has a job now. He got hired by Paraguay. But I think he's someone who had a combination of having been in MLS, knowing CONCACAF, having an understanding about how American soccer is. I think he would have been a perfect fit. And I know he was interested in the job, but it never got that far. He never, you know, there was never any conversation, and meanwhile he was being courted by other countries. But as far as who's available now, I mean, one guy who, you know, people should talk about, but I haven't heard anyone talk about, is Jesse Marsh. Yeah. You know, Jesse Marsh is in Germany right now as an assistant at RB Leipzig in the Bundesliga. So it's kind of out of sight, out of mind. But for me, if you're asking about resumes, I mean, nothing against Greg Berhalter, but you stand up Jesse Marsh's resume next to his, and he has a better resume, I think. So I think he's someone that I would consider. Obviously, Peter Vermees is someone who I think would be a great candidate if he were interested. Only he knows for sure how interested he is. I do find it funny. He always seems to kind of find his way through to a new deal anytime the job comes open. You know, he knows how to play that part of the game. So that, you know, credit to him on that. But I think Jesse Marsh is one. I think Peter Vermees is one. No one talks about Bob Bradley. Obviously, people, there's a segment of the fan base who weren't crazy about the Bob Bradley era, even though I think it was a bit underrated. All those coaches, I think, could do a good job. And I agree with you that there is a Jurgen Klinsmann hangover. And even though he has his kind of supporters in American soccer, some fans who thought he did a good job and that he got a raw deal, I firmly disagree with that. I think he's a guy who, you know, while he tried to do some good things and while he did have some good ideas about the player pool and about the direction of the overall program, I just don't think as a coach he cut it. I don't think he was a good tactician. I don't think he was a good manager of a team in terms of, you know, playing in players in their proper positions, having a clear understanding of, as you said, identity. I think that was a big failing of his. And overall, I think the fact that he had so much control when he was the coach, that's what has scared, I don't want to say scared, but that's what kind of set the new direction for U.S. soccer, in that everyone, I think, at U.S. soccer agrees, we don't want another experience where one guy has all the power and has all the control as the head coach. And you know, I think if anything, that the Klinsmann experience is why we now have a general manager, and why we now have, you know, a head coach is going to be hired by that general manager in this whole process the way it is now.
Yeah, so it's going to be a really important hire, obviously. And I think, Ivis, a lot of that has to do with this young generation of players coming up, and it looks like a real opportunity for U.S. soccer moving forward. And so I'm curious, with this new young group, what did you think about the game against Brazil with a bunch of the young guys coming through and playing in that game?
It was a rough assignment from the beginning, right? I mean, yeah. I don't think anyone was shocked to see that Brazil is better than the U.S. Even if it were a full-strength team, including veterans who could still contribute for the U.S., you had a Brazil team that was top to bottom full strength. Like, it's their squad. I mean, you can say, okay, Gabriel Jesus wasn't there, but if you looked at every single position, they had the quality, they had the experience at almost every single position. And then on the other side, you have, you know, that's a team made up of the very, very best players in the world. And then you have a U.S. team where a lot of guys are in their first year, second year, even as professionals, and a lot of guys in single digits in cap. So it went about the way you would expect a game like that to go. I think that's why I like this Mexico friendly a lot better as a measure for kind of how this group is moving along, because they'll be facing a group that's kind of, you can say, is their peers in the sense of a lot of guys in that, you know, 18, 19 to 22, 23 range. Those groups that are going to be kind of the foundations of the next cycle. So I think this is definitely going to be a better test to see kind of what this group is made of at this point. You don't need them to be the finished product when we're 4 years and change away from the next World Cup. But I think this game tonight's going to be a good it's going to give us a good idea who's really up for it and who really has some promise going forward.
I got to tell you, Ivis, is a guy who wasted a first-round draft pick in our player pool on Gabriel Jesus. He took one less shot, I think, in that game against the United States than he did in the entire World Cup. So I don't think that Brazil was missing out too much on having him in that game. I'm not bitter about...
That's some bitterness coming through there.
Yeah. Once again, we're visiting with Ivis Galarceb. You should, if you're not already, following him on Twitter, at Soccer by Ivis. That's Soccer, B-Y-I-V-E-S. And you posted a column about what I think is one of the biggest, maybe a microcosm in many people's mind, of the angst over the United States' lack of direction here over the past year or two, which is about Jonathan Gonzalez, who... Whether or not that is because of what happened with U.S. soccer over the last couple of years, people have kind of taken that as, look at the failure of U.S. soccer to allow this guy to basically choose to play for Mexico instead of the U.S. Whether that's right or wrong, I do encourage people to go read your article about that. I want to get your thoughts on future players in that same vein. Should there be some sense of urgency to get that head coach, to get that direction? Are there a lot of other players coming into situations like this? How do you see the future of a Jonathan Gonzalez-type player playing out in the near term for the United States?
Well, the first thing I'd say is what I think people need to kind of take a breath and really kind of sit back and look back at what happened with that. I mean, it really was a perfect storm of circumstance when it comes to Jonathan Gonzalez, as much as everyone wants to paint it as a systemic issue and systemic problems. And I know, look, U.S. soccer doesn't have its issues when it comes to the Latino American player pool and even just the Latino American soccer community as a whole, as much as some folks in U.S. soccer refuse to kind of believe that. But with Jonathan Gonzalez, it was such a unique situation where you have a player who was in the U-20 player pool and wasn't even one of the top prospects at his position, hadn't been a pro yet, and then he happens to break out for his club team right around the same time that the U.S. is heading towards that kind of abyss of missing the World Cup. So the timing of it all just really worked out, just as bad as you could expect for the U.S., where they really weren't in a position to be looking out for this prospect who happened to just rise so quickly. And at the same time, you have a Mexican Federation that has made it one of its kind of targets and one of its missions to go after Mexican-American talent, top Mexican-American talent. That's a mandate. That's something that they've decided, look, we're going to do this. We're going to go after these players. We're going to recruit these players. All of a sudden, it's like SEC football now for them in terms of, you know, they're going out and really putting the hard recruiting pitch to these players. And when they're the only ones doing it, and the U.S. is not taking that same approach, obviously the U.S. is going to kind of trail behind. But with Gonzalez, it was a very unique situation. By the time they even realized that they were missing out on him, it was too late. His head was turned. He was having a best 11 season in Mexico, and Mexico had already started the recruiting pitch before. And I don't think the U.S. took it seriously enough. I wrote a piece, I want to say early December, warning. I put the warning out in that piece that, listen, you might be losing this kid because everything that's kind of happening now. And it happened, and now this is, yeah, one of the big storylines of this game, just because U.S. fans are going to see Jonathan Gonzalez now in a Mexico uniform when a year ago he was in the U-20 player pool. So it's still a touchy subject, I can tell you that, in terms of U.S. soccer. As far as bigger picture, of course it's going to help to have a new head coach in place who can start to build the relationships with the senior player pool, and also so then you can start hiring the U-23 coach, start settling in on the U, because the lower ranks are struggling a bit as well, because there's been shakeups in terms of coaching. There are positions that need to be filled. A lot is on hold right now while Ernie Stewart focuses on hiring a head coach. And the sooner that he does that, the sooner all those other positions get filled and those coaches can start going out there and having a better connection with player pools at all levels. And Ernie Stewart's hiring, I think, should be pointed out, it's going to be part of his job as well, to kind of keep tabs on who are the up-and-coming prospects, who are some of these talented players that maybe, you know, you don't necessarily need to pitch them on playing for the U.S. Because at the end of the day, I agree with Cyber Ramos in that a player should want to play for the U.S. I shouldn't have to sell you on playing for the U.S. I shouldn't have to give you the hard recruiting pitch, wine and dine you. Either you want to play for the U.S. or you don't want to play for the U.S. I'm in that school of thought, but at the same time, having someone who's focused on the players – so that they're not kind of falling through the cracks, I think is definitely going to be a big thing.
Why do you think it's taking so long to hire this coach?
There's so many conspiracy theories that could be a whole other show. But the party line, the company line on the whole thing is basically, once again, it's just, you know, the U.S. soccer is a victim of circumstance in the standpoint of you miss out on the World Cup that happens in October. Turn around, you have a presidential election everyone needs to focus on. That happens, president's elected, all of a sudden you're focusing on the World Cup bid. And before you know it, it's already May, June by the time the U.S. wins the bid. And now you have to hire a general manager. Then you hire a general manager who can't start immediately, who needs another 2 months to kind of see out his responsibilities with his previous employer. And here we are, August 1st. And all of a sudden, 8 months have flown by. And all the ground you might have had on the other countries that would need a coach has evaporated. And for me, I think that was concerning to me when I start seeing countries that played in the World Cup and already well ahead of the U.S. in terms of their coaching searches. So that Ernie Stewart, I don't want to say he's a perfectionist, but he's clearly got his process. He clearly has his idea of how he wants to go about things, and it's pretty deliberate. So now here we are. We're going to probably not get a coach until November, and there are definitely conspiracy theories that the reason this has been dragged out is because Greg Berhalter was the choice all along. This makes it look a little more, you know, when you drag it out like this, it'll make it easier to kind of pawn him off as being the option. That's one conspiracy theory. I'm not saying I subscribe to it, but it's definitely out there. But we'll see. We'll see who the coach is. For me, it's 90%. It's going to be an MLS coach, that, if you ask me.
You think it's going to be Berhalter?
If put it this way, if I had to bet money on it, if I had to bet my money on who the coach, I would right now be putting my money on Greg Berhalter.
Yeah, that's where I'm at too, and you're more plugged in than I am. Again, we're visiting with Ivis Galarsep. Hey, before we let you go, and of course, we've been previewing this. We've really been talking more about the coaching search than previewing the USA-Mexico game, but it's coming up here at 7:30. I wanted to get a couple of MLS takes from you as well. The big news of the week, Ziggy Schmidt, the winningest coach in MLS history, stepping down, saying it's his own choice anyway. If you believe that or not, I guess is your choice, but stepping down of the LA Galaxy, what's your reaction to that news this week?
I can't imagine anyone really believes that he stepped down of his own accord. I mean, I've been around the league long enough to know, to see the signs of one of these jump or push you situations. And clearly, I think that's what took place here. For me, I don't want to say it's unfortunate, but what people need to understand, he's not the problem, or he's definitely not the only problem. He's definitely not the biggest problem. But when it comes down to it, their front office is a mess. Their front office has been a mess. Yeah, it was a disaster last year, which was a huge year for them. Before LAFC shows up,
yep.
You had an opportunity to really kind of rebuild, turn things around. They decided to go with this, you know, homegrown, focus on the academy approach, but then they didn't pull it off, and it was a complete disaster. And then you follow it up this year with another opportunity to kind of clean it up, and then you had another disaster. You had another awful season. They went and signed Zlatan, even though Ziggy Schmidt, from everything I understand, he never wanted Zlatan. I mean, they went and traded for Ola Kamara, who was an established forward in this league. And look, Zlatan's better than Ola Kamara. No one's saying that's not the case. But when you're building a team, the way, especially in a league where there's a salary cap, that stuff matters. And I get why they signed Zlatan, and people love that he's in the league. My son, he's his favorite player. He loves that he's in the league.
Mm-hmm.
But it made it that much tougher on Ziggy to try to put a team out there when you know, you go and sign a player at a position you didn't really need a player. So it's not on Ziggy. It's not all on Ziggy when people want to look at LA struggles. It's really on a front office that has some of these guys. Peter Vajenas, how does this guy still have a job, is my understanding. Chris Klein, he seems like Mr. Untouchable, but at some point he's got to start facing some pressure there, because you know what? While he's been on the job, it hasn't been a great ride for the Galaxy. Pretty much since Bruce Arena left, it's been a mess.
Certainly the case, and so we're headed now into the nitty gritty of the MLS season, getting close to the playoffs here. I'm curious, what has been maybe your biggest takeaway from the season so far, and who's your favorite heading into the MLS playoffs?
In terms of a surprise, and it's funny, like for me, for years, I've always kind of I've always overshadowed on the Philadelphia Union. I've always thought they do better than they're going to do. And this year, I kind of took it easy on expectations for them. But for me, they've really exceeded expectations. And Jim Curtin deserves a ton of credit for what they've done this year. They're a team that doesn't spend a ton of money. And for him to have them in playoff position and in the Open Cup final, I think he deserves a ton of credit for that. In terms of favorite right now, I mean, everyone likes to talk about Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And look, they're a good team, entertaining team, fun team to watch. But what I've seen is a team that when they play top teams in the league, they don't do so hot. Their record against the very best teams is pretty suspect. It's pretty shaky. So a team for me like the Red Bulls right now, I think they're shaping up to be the favorite, and that's not really a surprise. The only thing that's surprising about it is they switch coaches midseason, and you wondered how they would respond to that. And I think they've responded excellently. Chris Thomas has done a good job taking over for Jesse Marsh, and they really haven't missed a beat. And with that team, with Tyler Adams in there, Bradley Phillips up top, Luis Robles in the back, and the center backs that they have everything you need to win the title. So for me right now, I put them ahead of Atlanta as favorite. Obviously, KC, you can never count out, especially when Diego Rubio keeps scoring goals. You know, so much for needy. You know, I wanted to write a piece about KC missing the boat on signing a high price forward in the summer. But Diego Rubio is kind of giving you what you would have wanted to get from that signing anyway. So I think that puts them right in the picture as well. But right now, I'm going to go Red Bulls first, Atlanta second.
Do you think Sporting KC are the best team in the West when it comes to their chance to advance in the playoffs? I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you mentioned them and no other Western teams. Where do you think of Sporting in the West?
Well, I think they have the experience. I think when you look at some of the veteran foundation they have, I think that gives them a bit of an edge. I mean, Dallas obviously has done a good job. Oscar Pereira has done a great job rebounding from last year's nightmare. But I just don't think they have it in a playoff format. One team that, you know what, I don't know if anyone's been talking about, LAFC, even though they lost Lawrence Mann, you can't count on Bob Bradley when you get into the playoff format. He knows it up and down, and with the attack that they have and the home field edge that they have, they could cause problems. I think they're a team that, you know what, they could absolutely just come out of nowhere and win the West in the playoffs. So I don't think they're a team that anyone's going to really want to mess with.
It's going to be a lot of fun. Ivis, we thank you so much for the time. Covered a lot of topics. Enjoy USA versus Mexico, and hopefully we can talk to you again real soon.
Sure, man. Anytime you need me.
All right, that is Ivis Galarcep. Again, follow him on Twitter. If you're a soccer fan, you got to. All kinds of great content. At Soccer by Ivis is the Twitter handle. We'll take a break. We'll talk some Sporting KC. We'll break down the game against Orlando City and look ahead to San Jose as well as the Sporting KC show continues. Our thanks to Ivis Galarcep for joining us on the first segment of the show today. USA-Mexico underway. We continue with the Sporting Kansas City show. We're going to have a little fun here because I'm not saying that he wasn't our first choice. I'm just saying that Ike Opara had an appointment today and couldn't make it on the show. So we got Todd Lebo, which is like an upgrade in my view.
Yeah, I'm
one bald man for another.
One of the better defenders in the league.
Yeah.
I'm pretty athletic too.
You are.
Jump. What's the vertical like there?
Oh,
probably same as Ike getting up there.
I could maybe jump a foot.
There you go.
I don't know.
We didn't bring you on for your vertical skills. We brought you on for your
jump out the gym.
Yeah, your ability to. You're a Sporting Kansas City fan.
Yeah.
And we want to get a fan's perspective on what you make of this year's Sporting Kansas City team and where they stand right now compared to maybe the last few years.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm excited about how they turned the page because, you know, they started off so well and then July was just like lost. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was atrocious. And you're like, man, my thought heading into the year was without, sadly, the United States being involved in the World Cup, there was going to be a whole lot less absences. And I thought that was going to be great for kind of that time of year, and it was not great. They were not very good, and you know, they turned a corner and they got really hot in August. I know they lost to Seattle, but they jumped right back on the winning track last week, and I think they're in really good shape. And they seem, you guys tell me if I'm wrong, they seem like the health is in great order right now and getting healthier, which they have not done the last few years. They have not been healthy down the stretch, and they've generally faded, and that's been disappointing. Because when you win it all, you have to be great all year long and find a way to be at your best. in September and October and November when the playoffs are going down. And they have not found a way to do that. They keep dropping themselves into these one-off games, and that's the hard part about MLS playoffs, man. You can't have a bad night when you're having one of those games, especially when they're going on the road, and that's what's ended up happening. So I think they've got themselves positioned well, and I think first place is still an option, obviously. But even if not, if they stay to where they don't, if they're just out of that wild card game, I think that will help them, because while they've played all right in some of those games, they haven't gotten it done. And if you don't get it done, you can't build momentum. The thing's just over. They pull the rug out from under you, and you're just done. So I think they've done a nice job up to now, and hopefully they'll stay healthier and start playing. I want to see the defense get better. I mean, I think the defense has shown really well recently.
Five shutouts in the last six games.
That's been what we expected, because it was kind of fun soccer early in the year, but it was like, wait a second, this is the best defense in the league last year. Why is everyone scoring two or three goals in these games? You need to do it all to win in this league. And I think there's more offense, maybe. I don't know the real numbers. I think there's been more offense in the league this year. So it's harder to play defense because maybe there's some more skilled players out there on offense. But if they get the defense ratcheted up like it's going now and they continue to score, I think they've got the great attitude. And I think Vermees has he's got them pointed in the right direction, because he's not happy with how it's ended the last 5 years or 4 years or whatever. I mean, that's not what he's about. You know, and I know it's nice to win the U.S. Open Cup, which they've done a few times since the MLS Cup. But I think the MLS Cup is the real sight here this year, and that would be the trophy they're really after this year.
Yeah, I think you make a good point on the injury front, especially the health of the team. And you saw Kyrie Shelton, you know, he's on the bench for that game, playing a little bit with the Rangers. And now I think they are the healthiest they've been at this point in the season, and hopefully that serves them well. And especially up top now with Shelton coming back, there's just so many options up top and different types of players for different situations
as well. I think they've got a great mix of older veterans and young guys, man. They've got some young players who look like they really have a future, and the future is now. I mean, that's one of the things that people have talked about with MLS and the U.S. national team, honestly, is young players have to get better. And they're playing young players. And they're not just out there filling a couple of minutes. I mean, they got guys scoring goals and making big plays. And it seems to me like some of these guys like that stage a little bit. I think they've got some young players who are going to really enjoy these matches down the stretch and would love to be in the playoff stuff. I remember in the playoffs, in the run in 13, you know, Dom Dwyer had just been this guy.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Young guy, whoever's like, oh, there's this young guy. He's got a British accent. It's pretty cool. And all of a sudden, man, in the playoffs, he was like, wait a second. That's, you know, now he's jumping up. He loved that stage. And I think that some of these young guys are kind of showing that. Now, we won't know until you actually make the postseason. But I thought Dwyer kind of got better as the postseason went, and they started trusting him a little bit. And I could see that with some of these younger guys as well. If they get in that starting 11 and they want that stage, and then, you know, you want the ball and you want to go score, I think they've got a great mix of those really talented young players who have gotten a ton of experience this year. And, you know, obviously have some great veterans.
I mean, I think that it's going to be fascinating to see what the 18 looks like in San Jose, because I think they're going to actually have to leave a guy or two home. Because now, all of a sudden, with everybody healthy, there's going to be a couple of guys that you've looked at as regulars that could be in the starting lineup on a first-choice team for Peter Vermees, and there's not even enough space for him on the bench, which I don't remember. And I don't want to oversell what Sporting Kansas City will do, because they got to go out and take care of business. There's almost, I have a different attitude about these games now, where it's like, I went from thinking, you know, Sporting could go win this game, to, man, I hope Sporting doesn't blow this game, because they should win this game.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a different kind of pressure. I was really nervous about the Orlando game. You know, Carter and I talked about that beforehand, like, you know, Dom's coming back, you know, he's going to be fired up. You're missing three guys on international duty. You're missing, you know, the reigning MLS Defender of the Year.
Yeah, you never apologize for a win, man.
And they went out and they won the game. And it wasn't really that pretty of a game.
Never apologize.
But that was like a relief to me. And I kind of feel the same way about going to San Jose.
Well, basically they're just a draw and a loss different than Dallas, right? So just think if something squirts through there and you get a draw at home, and you're even worse off. So you don't apologize for winning. And if they go out to San Jose and win, which they should, because it's the worst team in the league, whatever, Yeah. But it's the road, and the road is not easy in this league, and they've been good on the road, you know, notwithstanding what happened to Seattle. But they've done a nice job on the road, and that's kind of what them got them jump-started again, was a couple of road wins. Yeah. And they weren't the prettiest ones, I mean, especially the one in Houston wasn't the prettiest thing ever. But, hey, man, win's a win. So you don't apologize for it. So you find any way to go get 3 points this weekend and then just watch everything else happen because, you know, everyone else is at home, right?
Yeah, so Dallas at home. LAFC's at home. So you feel like this is a big situation where you
hold your serve and be there.
Yeah.
Late game, too, on Saturday
You're
going to
know what everybody else has done, right?
Yep.
And you mentioned Dallas and the last two games being LAFC and Dallas. It kind of feels like the playoffs are going to start a little early for Sporting this
yourselves,
year.
Yeah. No doubt about it. And I think, listen, they got to finish. You have to finish, and you have to finish and be right when you finish because they've managed to make it in the playoffs every year. Listen, there's a lot of people would love to have Sporting's problems, okay?
Yeah.
A lot of organizations out there like, oh, yeah, sure, you make the playoffs every year, and you don't win the whole thing. They'd love to have those problems, but they need – I think they've learned a lot from listening to Vermees talk about trying to position yourselves and get yourself ramped up at the right time because this is a long season, man. It is a lot that goes into these seasons, and I know it seems like because you know they play soccer at a different time of year here than they do everywhere else in the world, and it probably gets some attention at different times of year. And now a lot of focus turns into football and all that stuff. These are the big games right now, though. You know, this is the time to get out to Children's Mercy Park and be there for the team. And they've done a great job of doing that. But this is when you need to be at your best. So if they continue to do that and he gets the fitness right with everyone and the crowd stay behind him and they stay where they are in the standings and have these big matches down the stretch, that's when the fun really starts. And I think they've learned some lessons about how to be healthy at the end and not grind yourself up when it's 100 degrees outside.
I think those are all really good points.
Well, depth helps too.
Yeah. And I was just about to make that point. First of all, they're at 48 points right now with 7 games to go. Last year, they finished on 49 points. Now, we also know they went down the stretch for the last 5 games and only picked up one point out of those games. So it's not a fait accompli that they're but it looks like the way they're playing right now, they're going to blow the doors off of the numbers of the point total they had last year. And I think you're right. I've had conversations with Peter Vermees about the idea of how do we avoid that late season slump.
This is all he thinks about.
And so there have been some measures put in place, but I also think that part of that was assembling a team that has enough players on it that you can actually rotate the squad a little bit. All of a sudden you look at it, he started resting Johnny Russell. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Johnny Russell had that little knee injury, but he kept leaving him on the bench because he said, look, we need him ramping up,
yeah.
And he's had a long season because he played all the whole winter in England. He gives Daniel Shalloway a day off right before he goes off to international duty. Now, that's all nice and good, but it's a lot easier to do that when Gerso's playing pretty well.
Yeah.
And you just brought in Christian Namath, and you got, you know, it allows them, Carter, to be in a position. You guys, this is the question, I guess, for it, because time will tell, but I'm asking for you guys, your opinions right now. I feel like this is different. I believe this team is different than what we've seen the last 2 or 3 years that where they did kind of hit that wall at the most important part of the season. This team looks to me like they've got the bodies, they've got the legs underneath them, and they have the confidence. The
ability to score as well.
That's why they can win on the road this year. And they couldn't
finding goals
yeah.
last year. Yeah.
There's some playmakers now. I think that's a huge difference. You
and
talk
there's a
about,
lot of them.
Yeah, they're in on all levels of the
field. They didn't snap their fingers
field.
And do it either. I mean, I think they wanted to snap their fingers in like January. And, you know, it's not that easy sometimes. They had to work, you know, and had to go find some guys. And it took them a long time to get this deal worked back out to get Namath back here. But, you know, they needed those guys to score because last year they were so good on defense. And they got chances after chances after chances. Nobody could score, though. And now they got some guys who can do that. So that's a big, big help. I mean, listen, you want to play great defense, but you can never win a game if you don't score.
That's true. I've got a question for Todd. Maybe not Sporting related, but do you have any good outside ideas for soccer? I'm putting you on the spot here.
Well, my outside idea would be to loosen up how they call offsides. I know they say if you're even, you're on. I think they get a little too whistle happy with that. I think they should let it err on the side of let some guys score.
Okay,
that's what I would like to see.
Sure,
because I think
maybe
I
the
think
body should maybe. Be like the ball. The ball has to cross all the way. The whole ball has to cross over the line to be a goal. Your entire body has to be past the last defender.
If you're more of like the shoulder being off.
Just call it looser, man. I think goals are good. People like
goals. That's a fair statement.
You know, I think people like to see goals. I don't want to see people down there cherry picking or anything like that, but I just loosen it up a little bit.
Well, now VAR might throw complications into that, though.
No, VAR throws a complication at everything. it kind of hurts the flow.
Are you for or against it?
I'm for it. I think they got to work out the bugs on how to implement it, but I 100% am for fixing egregious errors.
I feel like MLS has made it more complicated than we've seen. Maybe
it's a work in progress.
Some other leagues definitely is a work in progress. But I agree.
Yeah.
So the league itself has decided that goals are good because you mentioned earlier goal scoring being up. Look, this influx of money came in, TAM, all these mechanisms that nobody can quite understand, but it's more money for the teams. And almost all of them spent that money on attacking players. They spent it on guys that can put the ball in the net. Hasn't that been good? I mean, don't you feel like the product's been a little bit more...
Absolutely. You know? Soccer is watchable. And I'm not someone who needs 7 to 6 games, but soccer is watchable when people score. I like shots, and I like to see great saves, but you got to have some goals, you know. And you hear Peter Vermees say this a bunch. You know, he'll call a game a dog or something, you know, if it's no good. And you can have a dog that's 2-2 or 1-1, probably, but it's more likely your dog's gonna be 1-0 or 0-0 because you're not having as much action. And a lot of people kind of play doggy games against Sporting because of the way Sporting plays. Tough luck. I wish everyone tried harder, you know, to score. But some people, if you don't have the talent to go try to score, I don't blame them. You're gonna try to get a result however you can get it. I just don't like it. You know what I mean? I want to see it different. I don't want to watch someone in college football run the ball in the middle 3 times.
But that's another thing that's made this team so much more enjoyable is they seem like they have ideas. You know, when the other team bunkers in, it might take a while. But you get this sense that they're going to work something out here. They're going to find a way through this team more often than not, whereas I don't know that you could always feel that confident. They're going to create some, like you said in the past, they'll create some shots, but... You know, I don't know how good those chances are going to be on goal. Yeah. And
they're always shooting. So I like it, man. Fire them up there. It's like Nate Buchady at the gym in high school, man. He's in the gym, he's shooting.
I was the guy that wasn't making. I would shoot, though.
Well, you were like maybe it's been for the last couple of years for Sporting. A lot of shots, not as many goals.
Next one's going in, I'm sure of it.
You never make a shot you didn't take.
This is a great time of year, though, isn't it? When it starts that little brisk air.
Yes.
It's a little cool. Everybody's a little bit. I think there's more energy in the stands.
Sure, I feel like that. Ball zipping around. It seems a lot more.
A little hot and lethargic sometimes.
Yeah, in the summer.
Be a little warm out there. You get
out
there
for the fans and the players. Yes. Everybody's just kind of like, oh man, it's 100 degrees outside.
For us, the broadcasters, when we were sitting down there in the sun, our producer wouldn't even move us for pregame for a while.
Shout out Brad Martell for putting us in the sun.
Finally, get out of the sun.
Yeah,
get out of the sun. Well, there's some sun out there. Depending on the game time, you can't hardly avoid it some places.
True.
We got to get you to one of these last three home games.
I know.
RSL, LAFC, and who am I missing? It's somebody else in LA Galaxy.
It's not
in that order.
Good luck getting a Galaxy ticket, though.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I know some people. I know Nate Buchady and Carter Augustine.
There's also a little thing called media credential, too, if it doesn't work out.
Got that as well.
Yeah. So
I like covering games, but it's more fun to be in the stands. Although, one of the most fun things I've ever done in the media was last year when they won the U.S. Open Cup, and they just let everyone kind of go into the locker room, and we got to listen to Peter, you know, because U.S. Open Cup's different. It's not the end of the year.
Yeah.
And they had a game that weekend, and it was great to hear him coach these guys up while letting them celebrate. That's one of the coolest things I ever got to see, because it was behind the scenes. They were like, yeah, sure, come on in here. You got to see that part that you don't get to see all the time. It was pretty cool. So it's fun.
Yeah, it's going to be good. Well, that's Todd Lebo. Thanks, buddy. We appreciate it.
Anytime, guys.
That was fun.
Yeah. Todd Lebo. We don't need you, Ike Opara. Back after this to finish things out on the Sporting Kansas City Show. Back to wrap things up on another edition of the Sporting Kansas City Show. Our thanks to Ivis Galarsep and Todd Lebo for joining us on the show today. That was pretty fun.
That was fun. Fun couple of guys there.
Yeah. So let's now talk San Jose Earthquakes. This you pointed out to me last week, Carter. is the only team in MLS who have already been eliminated from the playoffs. So they got the E by their name in the MLS standings.
Doesn't stand for earthquakes.
It doesn't. It could. Which, by the way, I failed to mention this earlier. Speaking of earthquakes, what about Diego Rubio on national team duty? The Chilean national team's first game of scheduled two over this past four-day period canceled because of a massive earthquake hitting outside of Japan. Thankfully, everybody was safe. They made it to their next game, which was earlier today, which Diego Rubio played, I believe, 58 minutes in. But that had to have been a harrowing experience for Diego Rubio, an actual real earthquake.
Yeah, no kidding. Although I think they do get some earthquakes in Chile, so maybe he had been through it before. Certainly would be for me. So yeah, you're good to hear that he and the rest of the team are safe. But yeah, Japan's been getting hit hard by some natural disasters over the past couple of years.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Well, there are two teams in MLS who have an X by their name in the standings. That would be the New York Red Bulls, who are on 55 points with 28 games played. Atlanta United on 54 points with 27 games played. So if you're still daydreaming about the Supporters Shield for Sporting, they find themselves 7 points back of Red Bulls with a game in hand.
So it's still out there.
It's possible, man. I mean, I haven't looked at the Red Bull schedule down the stretch.
The X on theirs is more because, you know, seventh place is 33 points in the East,
and it's a wide gap.
It's 40 in the West. Yeah. So that's the big number there. But yeah, it's even if you win that game in hand and you're 4 points back, that's still asking a lot to you're going to need help with the Red Bulls dropping some points down the stretch.
Yeah, and they're 6 points back of Atlanta United, and they don't have a game of hand in there, so you might almost look at that. Atlanta United leads in points per game at an even two. But, look, for Sporting KC, we've looked at the schedule. I mean, you make the case that they should be favorites in all but one game left on the schedule the rest of the way. Now, we know MLS doesn't play out that way. These are road games, and you never know, but they're the better team than San Jose this weekend. They've got Philly next weekend. Philly's got a midweek game before that game, and then it's a Sunday game. They've got 3 days later the Open Cup final. So who knows what kind of a squad you're going to see them put out there in that game.
You would assume it's second choice.
Should be.
You would see a lot of Beth Steele players in that game, but
it's still going to be
tough. And we heard from Ivis earlier that Jim Curtin has done so well with this Philadelphia team, especially this year, and they're bringing young guys through. So they've got some young guys that may feature in that game, and playing in Philly, I know there's some good memories there, but it's a tough place to play.
Yep, and I think it's a system too, the way that that they have an idea of how they want to play. So even if they bring up other guys, they're going to play in the system. The point being is, if Sporting KC really keep flying, they can go win a couple of road games here. They might be able to put themselves back in that conversation. Might be a bit of a long shot, but I don't think it's outlandish to still at least take a look at that. Right now, a point behind FC Dallas in the West on 48 points, San Jose on 20 points. They are 4-15-8 on the year. They have beaten exactly two teams in MLS this season. Ironically, though, one of those teams is FC Dallas, who they've beaten twice.
Yeah.
How do you make heads or tails of that?
I don't.
You just don't even try to explain it.
I mean, I don't understand that. I mean, it's MLS. I guess it's so cliche, but that's one that just doesn't make sense. Like, you wouldn't expect them to drop two games to San Jose, and the other team that they beat, Minnesota United. So, I mean, that kind of makes a little more sense. Just looking at this Earthquakes team, they just have been really shorn of anything in attack this year, and it is surprising that they got Dallas a couple times, but I'm sure Sporting fans have been huge Earthquake fans up until this point. But that being said, easy to laugh at Dallas when it happens to them, but Sporting has to go and do the job out West this weekend. So, you know, it's you don't want to be the third team that this Earthquakes team beats this year, that's for sure.
Speaking of Matt Beisler this morning on the Border Patrol, he said, look, he thinks that the E by San Jose's name makes them more dangerous because there's no pressure. They can just relax and go play. They got nothing to lose. So Sporting have to be ready to go. But they're 2-6-5 at home. I mean, you don't see home records like that in MLS, even out of bad teams. It's really eye-catching when you look at it.
It has been. It's been a really tough season. And, you know, we saw it from Orlando a little bit, and it was interesting hearing them talk during the week, the coaching staff, and then getting a chance to talk with Daniel Bird, the assistant for Orlando, and just kind of them being upfront about it. yeah, this season's pretty much over. I know every player wants to win every game. At this level, you should, like, if you don't have that in you, I think it's pretty tough to get to this level. But that being said, every player wants to win every game, but every player also might have in the back of their minds, hey, playing for my job. And yeah, it was interesting to hear the Orlando coaching staff actually say that.
Yeah.
And even more interesting to me to say, and they could be playing for jobs elsewhere too if they don't want to be here. And if they aren't here, then this is their livelihood. So they've got to show well here down the stretch.
It's like watching Hard Knocks on HBO. Yeah. They're like, hey, you might not make it with this team, but everything you're doing is on film for all the other coaches around the league or other leagues in the world to watch as well. So they still have motivation to go play.
You got Wando's motivation right now. It seems like that's the only story.
142 goals in his career.
Yep.
He's one of the all-time greats. He started the last couple of games for them, so you might think that he'll be in the starting 11 again. I don't love what they have defensively. They just don't seem like they've had that organization and that style of play. Michael Starr, the head coach, came from Sweden. He's brought some Swedish players in. They haven't necessarily been able to do the job the way that he's wanted them to. Some of them have called out the team for, there's been questions about Michael Starr inserting players and then taking them out of the game, right before halftime. It's just been a rocky, rocky season for San Jose. But again, it's MLS. It's up to Sporting KC to go take advantage of that. And one other thing is, what exactly will Johnny Russell, Daniel Shalhoub, and Diego Rubio bring to the table? Understand that the reports are that Johnny Russell will be joining the team again tomorrow, which will be Wednesday. So will Daniel Shalhoub. But they'll be flying back from Europe at that time. And Diego Rubio, I believe, is scheduled just to join the team in San Jose. Peter Vermees says they'll be available, but how much do you ask of those guys after a long flight, halfway across the planet?
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised to see all three of them still out of the lineup for this one. So I think, again, the onus will be on the midfield you build from the back that this team has been so good defensively. But what I thought in the Orlando game that they did really well was the midfield, I thought, dominated. And yeah, you look at the San Jose team and you feel like that is an opportunity there again to do the same. Just watching Sasha Kljestan with that Orlando team, I don't think he made one really telling pass in the entire game. And he was so frustrated. And I think that was in large part because that midfield just wasn't. Espinoza was flying all over the place. Ilya was getting just about every interception, clogging every passing lane. And then you see a little bit of magic from Felipe Gutierrez as well. And so I think that was a good sign as well to kind of see the midfield clicking again. It was a pretty tense game and just a one-goal affair, but I thought they controlled that game, and yeah, I think this is a chance against San Jose to go on the road and keep the ball and do the same.
I'll be interested to see if Johan Quaze is back in the 11 as well, because we've all talked about it. That was a real confidence builder, I think, for him. Even if a goal didn't come from it, he did have an assist in the game.
And he was just tormenting Spectre down that side.
Yeah, and just full of confidence. And I think more confidence than we've seen Quaze play with all season long. So hopefully that's something that continues as well. All right, that's going to do it for us. Again, Saturday night, 9:30, late night on Fox Sports Kansas City and the
late
Fox
one.
Sports Go app, Sporting KC at San Jose. Our thanks to Ivis Galarsep and Todd Lebo and Carter Augustine. This is Nate Bucati saying we'll see you next time on the Sporting Kansas City Show.